Meandering in the margins of medicine, it's the Short Coat Podcast.
Weird news,
fresh views,
helpful clues and interviews
by students for students.
Subscribe to our weekly show at theshortcoat.com.
Whoa! It's the Short Coat Podcast.
I'm your host. I'm a host, Dave Etler. And I'm here with Eric Wilson.
Hello.
I'm here with Mark Torral.
Torral, yeah.
And I'm here with Dylan Todd. It became clear to me that I was, sorry, I didn't mean to.
Oh, it's all right.
Step on your hello. It became clear to me I was mispronouncing Mark Torral's name.
I didn't even notice.
Not long ago. Oh, bullshit. Oh. Yeah, so my apologies.
Well, thanks for the extra effort.
You know, I'm here. Welcome to another show. I would like to point out that that you can get high with no drugs. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Ready for this? I expect an experiment to happen because I noticed this week a story about being able to get high. No drugs needed. All you have to do is stare into a person's eyes for 10 minutes.
Oh, no.
And you will start hallucinating.
I think we're losing our definition of high.
Basically, this was a study published in some place. I read about it in medicaldaily.com. It's Troxler's fading phenomenon is what's at work here. So half of the pairs of subjects were seated opposite one another, gazing into each other's neutral expressions, and the other half were seated back to back, staring at the wall. Participants weren't informed what was going on. They just were supposed to stare into each other's eyes. I'm sure it wasn't awkward at all. But 10 minutes in, or after 10 minutes, the participants were asked to fill in questionnaires about their experiences in the room. And 90% of the paired volunteers admitted they saw their partner's face appear deformed. 75% saw, quote, monstrous beings. And 15% saw traits of a relative's face appear on their partner. So
a monstrous being?
A monstrous being. This is why I want Mark and Dylan. I particularly want Mark and Dylan. I don't know why, but I feel like Mark and Dylan should go try this at some point. And
just stare into each other's
eyes. We'll try it. We'll report back.
And report back. The author believes that these strange face apparitions are a consequence of coming back to reality after experiencing an altered state of consciousness caused by the lack of sensory stimulation, which is a part of this Troxler's.
So if you find the other person's face like particularly dull, then you'll have more hallucinations
because yeah.
There's a lot less sensory
yeah.
stimulation or something.
Which of you is more dull looking?
Oh, geez. That's probably me.
I don't know. You're both not.
We're both pretty dull.
You're both not. I don't think you're dull. I don't know. What the hell does dull mean?
I don't know.
That's
a terrible hypothesis.
Maybe beautiful people, because they have very symmetric faces. It's just there's... Oh. Maybe they have more
so the more whacked out your face is, yeah. the less likely a monstrous being will
appear.
I think I don't know about that.
I don't know. I mean, a lot of... If you study like how sensory input works, a lot of it is detecting differences and changes between things. And as you're focused on a single point, the areas around will start to morph like was described because you're not, I mean, there's no change happening there.
I noticed with interest that Mark and I are gazing.
Yeah, we can do it right now. We can just continue this.
That's what the Troxler's phenomena is. It's the bit where you stare at a dot and everything outside of that dot fades. Everything in your peripheral vision fades. And
What if there's no psychology explanation? It's just like there's like some type of Cthulhu-esque or Lovecraftian thing at work here, and a hideous being is emerging from another dimension.
Yeah, you should see what happens if you stare for 1 hour. At midnight.
I hope that's the case.
You know, it's funny. There's a lot of different, like, religious movements that have involved some of these, you know, boring or monotonous, like, I think Scientology comes to mind, where I think like two people, there's like one of them is auditing and it has like the little like the electronic thing.
Was it like an e-reader or something?
Yeah, that sounds like a,
I think Amazon sells this. Yeah.
And then I think they stare at each other for like long periods of time. So maybe this kind of, might contribute to why it has such an influence on
people.
That or the blackmail.
The blackmail doesn't help, I'm sure, but
Staring at mandalas. Mandala, is it mandala or mandala?
I think it's tomato tomato.
Okay.
I'll check with the Iowa City Zen Center and get back to you.
So I'm excited. Next week we'll have a report from from Mark and Dylan specifically about this. Eric, if you want to join in on a three-way.
Split one. You need some chameleons.
I don't want to leave you out.
That's okay. I don't need to participate. I'd hate to see what comes out of my face when somebody stares at it for 10 minutes.
We can develop on their study and have you stare at us staring at each other. What do our faces morph into?
It probably morph into one weird being. Hybrid.
Jeez.
Freaky. The other thing I read about this week was that you guys, how are your cybersecurity chops?
Really good.
Yeah? Are you like ready to defend your patients against hackers? Because
I don't know about that.
Did you hear about UCLA? Is that what this is?
I don't know. Was it UCLA? A team of hackers successfully killed a patient simulator. With a pacemaker. It's a patient simulator called iSTAN. And after a few hours of hacking away, during which I'm sure the phrase "I'm in" was said, because that's it always is.
Yeah.
The team of students was able to gain access to most of iSTAN's functions, which were vulnerable to denial of security of service attacks and brute force attacks and other sorts of, you know, taking control over. I think it would have been cool if it was a defibrillator pacemaker, because then you could just shock the patient continuously. The project was done because knowing about these things is probably a good idea, right? Mm-hmm. Whether or not that's possible.
And so they were white hat hackers.
Sure. Yeah. It wasn't a. Yeah. No.
It wasn't a covert op.
Wasn't a covert op to hack a mannequin. But it's concerning. Like that, one of the study authors said that if there's a high value profile individual with a medical issue, it would certainly make them vulnerable. And there's sort of been a lot of talk about this, not only with this, but with the Internet of Things, which is a big deal right now. Hooking up your home to things like that, and people can, I guess, break in and turn off like your lights.
Anything is possible. I mean, even a few years ago, or even longer ago, there was all the, you know, the stories about, oh, there was somebody had hacked a printer and that was how they accessed the network. Or there was like one thermostat in a building that was like hacked that like contained the malicious code. So it seems just about anything is susceptible, but maybe
refrigerators, microwaves.
Yeah. Nobody was
pumps that administer opiates to people.
Anything connected to the network. Yeah. That's,
I want
to
be a kind of crazy. I want to be a hacker, not to kill people, but to just mess with the thermostat and my office mates in this building. Like there are particular people it would be fun to just like turn up and down their thermostat and cause them to think that they're crazier.
Thanks.
I like it. I would do it.
That would be pretty sweet. These guys think that it's going to be part of your job to defend your patients against cybersecurity threats.
I don't know if it'll be the job of the physician.
Suddenly programming cybersecurity is a required first and second year class, and that'd be great.
Yeah. Classic case of,
I think it'd be cool.
Mission creep.
I think it'd be more that hospitals and I guess probably everyone is going to start having dedicated like cybersecurity personnel.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to talk about, I think maybe a couple months ago at UCLA, they reported a hack of their patient database. I think it was UCLA, somewhere in California. But
that happens all the time.
Right? But you expect that'll be a big issue too, because the whole push to get that all on computer systems. will obviously expose all of that to being able to digitally access it.
So the most common thing the most common thing I've read about anyway, as far as those sorts of situations, mm-hmm. is people just leaving their laptops full of patient data, lying around. Like the guy recently, there was a story recently about a doctor who left a laptop filled with patient data in his car, and the laptop got stolen out of his car. And so no information yet that this has been used in some way or mm-hmm. even, you know, noticed that there was data on it. But chances are it just got wiped and resold, you know, right? But mm-hmm. who knows? Yeah. You know, that's the sort of thing that that happens these days.
I feel like this idea of hacking into like pacemakers and things just gives my brain extreme fatigue. I'm just like, I don't want to think about it. And I feel like that must be how the older physicians we work with feel about all computers. Like when they say they're so frustrated with it and they just can't handle it. And we're like, why? It's fine. It's easy. Just type just things.
Push this thing over.
Yeah. But for me, we're going into the realm with this sort of stuff where I'm just like, you know, give a big sigh and just be like, I hope someone else worries about that, because that's too much for me to worry about.
We'll make the residents do that. Yeah. Yeah. That'll be the next frontier of resident BS. All right. Well, good luck, people with pacemakers and implanted defibrillators and things like that. Just, you know, keep it real.
I'm sure most of those people aren't have bigger things to worry about right now.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will be back in just a second on the Short Coat Podcast. Welcome to the Short Coat Podcast, everybody. Again, I'm Dave Etler, and I'm here with Eric Wilson. I'm here with Mark Terrell. I'm here with Dylan Todd, and we're back for another YouTube portion of the show, because we get a call this week from Todd.
That's exciting.
It is exciting. And by the way, before we get to Todd, it's interview day, one of the many interview days mm-hmm. that we'll be experiencing here at the College of Medicine over the next few weeks and or months. And got a visit from a listener who stopped by to say hi.
Hmm. Awesome.
And thank us for the show. Wow. And wow.
And here they are. Now they're mentioned in it.
I know. So let's listen to Todd. He has some things to say.
Hey, Shortcut Podcast. I have been listening for a little bit and wanted to call and tell you a short story about why I started community college, hoping to become a doctor eventually. On July 4th of 2014, my wife almost passed from a ectopic pregnancy, and I was able to get her to the emergency room at very much the last minute and got her into surgery and saved her life. And seeing the efficiency and effectiveness that the emergency room team had in helping care for her really inspired me. And I started my first semester a few weeks ago, and it's been a real interesting thing since I'm about 12 years older than your average freshman in community college. So I looked up your podcast, and it's been really inspiring, helping me keep focus on what I want to be doing, and please keep it up. And if you have any advice for someone in my position, being a little older and starting the community college route, I'd love to hear it. I appreciate the show, and thank you. Thanks, you guys. Bye.
Sweet.
That's nice. That's a great story. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad his wife is okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What advice do you think we can give for a guy like Todd who is beginning his studies later in life and, you know, not doing the traditional, go to a 4-year college, go to medical school, become a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say just keep going for it. Just stay persistent. I'm a little bit of a non-traditional student myself, although I never left college. I just did different college.
Cosmetology school.
Yeah, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people in my class and classes below who are a lot older than their classmates, and they had previous careers of 10, 12 years. And I think the nice thing is, you know, everybody's just here here to learn. It doesn't really matter what your age is. It's just a matter of sticking with it and being persistent, and you'll get there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so he's starting community college now with the goal of going to medical school.
Has recently begun, yeah.
Yeah. I would say the number one thing is just focus on getting into med school right now. Don't think too much about your age or how that fits in, because in your entering medical school class, you'll have a lot of classmates that at least a good amount that are definitely non-traditional. I mean, in our class, we had kids that came in with... I shouldn't say kids because they had children of their own. But I mean, how many kids did I forget his name, but he has like 4 children he entered medical school with.
Yeah. I think that's one thing that maybe it's not unique to the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine, but I think in general, especially our institution, recognizes that non-traditional students have things to offer that young whippersnappers that don't have much life experience don't necessarily bring. And I think that the fact that they recognize that they're always a part of every class of medical students, mm-hmm, is really refreshing. There's a great amount of variety in every class, I'd say.
I think people who are non-traditional in this sense may have something of an advantage in a way. I mean, there's something to be said for the life experience thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like a lot of people come to medical school, you know, right out of college, of course, and, you know, those people are great. I'm certainly not going to, you know, say that they're, you know, not good applicants. Absolutely. But at the same time, you know, if you have other stuff that you've done in your life, that's pretty attractive, that there's a maturity there that you probably have that, you know, other people just wouldn't have just because of lack of experience.
One thing that's nice is if you come back to this after doing something else, you're sure that this is what you want to do. Mm-hmm. If you come straight out of undergrad, I mean, that was the biggest problem for me going to graduate school in economics after undergrad was I was like, yeah, this sounds like a good path, but I wasn't really passionate about it. But then when I came to medical school, I was like, oh yeah, this is great. You know, this is exactly what I'm going to do. And I knew it because I tried something else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He didn't say what he'd done before.
Yeah.
Maybe he's a vagabond.
No, well, he could be. He doesn't sound like a vagabond. No,
but you know, everybody
is married.
Everybody could be inspired.
True. And the other thing that helps a lot of people in medical school is approaching it more as a job than as just classes, and mm-hmm, people who haven't necessarily worked in between school, or I mean, a lot of these people have really just been in the academic environment the whole time, and it does up its intensity when you get to medical school, and it helps a lot of people to approach it more just like a job every day, putting in the time, even though you're given a lot of flexibility. At least we were in our curriculum, where you could just sit at home and watch Panopto when you felt like it.
And the thing is, medical school and residency are not the greatest times to build a life.
Yes, that's what I heard.
Just in general, you know. And the fact that, you know, our caller might already have a great life set up, and then this is just, you know, adding on top of that. You know, I feel like there's the stress is much more manageable when you have something already set up. You know, mm-hmm, you have a support network, you have, you know, some stability in your life. Whereas, you know, young people, they're moving to a new place, they're under all this stress. I feel like, you know, that's a little bit less advantageous, maybe.
Well, although I would imagine that such a change to your environment to one that's very intense, like medical school, I would imagine that puts a bit of a...
Yeah.
It could put a bit of a strain on... Well, I think it would put a bit of a strain on things. Obviously, it's all in how you deal with that strain. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I was going to say, if I had advice, I would say that, you know, try to define success in a reasonable way. And I think this is probably true of any med school applicant, but maybe more important even for somebody who has a life outside of medical school. Because when you're a young person and you're in medical school, maybe you have the luxury of just like focusing all your attention on it to the exclusion of all else, if that's what you want to do. But when you're when you have a family, for instance, you know, you can't necessarily do that. There are times when you have to, but there are, you can't, you don't want to always do that. And so as a goal, success, quote unquote, might be useless. It might be better to, you know, because success is always over the horizon, I think. Mm-hmm. John Pianta and I were talking about this the other day, what the definition of success should be. As one gets into conversations with John Pianta, you discover many philosophical questions. But he said that, you know, it's always over the horizon, you know, for a lot of people, you know. Once you get to a certain place, you're still looking over the horizon to what success has now become. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's better to pick a target that defines success for you. And that might be helpful to somebody who is, you know, already in a, you know, has a life and already is in a relationship. Don't keep looking over that horizon. Just pick something for now, focus on it, you know, do that and make your goals sort of reasonable and achievable.
I could see that help, especially just with the type of people you'll be around who are in medical school or trying to get into medical school, or generally some of the more ambitious people who are always trying to reach over the horizon, as you were saying, and just see how far to the top they can get, just almost for the sake of that, without really stepping back and thinking about why or what that really means. So,
but I mean, definitely in that culture. Medicine is like an endless treadmill with endless difficulty. And so you just keep, like, these people, they will just keep going, and eventually they'll realize, like, oh, this doesn't stop ever. Mm-hmm. You know, like, there's always some next thing that you can do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You never reach the top.
You have to find some way to be happy while being on the treadmill, as opposed to thinking about what happens when you get off, because you never get off.
Right. Because, you know, you're like, okay, when am I going to start my life? Am I going to start in medical school? Am I going to start in residency? Am I going to start in fellowship? And I'm going to start at, you know, I'm
attending.
Attending. Like, when does your life start, you know?
So you're saying that my picket goal is crap.
No. I'm saying it's very good.
That's okay if it is. I don't know.
No. I'm just saying, if you have this constantly moving expectation of what success is, it never ends. You're always, you know, you're always going to want something else.
Yeah.
Because I thought that once I got into medical school, all of my problems would be solved. You know, but it, like, okay, this is.
You're kind of an idiot.
I know. But, you know, it's just like, oh, if I can just get into medical school, it becomes, oh, if I could just get into this residency program. Oh, if I could just, it just consumes you, and you're just left with, sorry, this is kind of depressing, but this happens to people. I've talked to people about it.
Yeah. Don't come. You're insane. Medical
school is awesome.
But as somebody who's going into family medicine, which is an awesome specialty and a great career, I mean, it's there's a lot of positives to get out of it, and you can find something that you love.
And there's a lot of lifelong learning, yes, but at the same time, it's like...
But if it's something you're passionate about, then you'll love doing it.
Well, it's just the idea of you have to learn how to enjoy the process of it all, because it kind of, as Dylan's saying, is just a long process, and you have to enjoy the stages as you go through them as much as you can, and appreciate the uniqueness and what you're learning from them, and the cool things that you actually get to do if you step back and look at it.
Yeah. So Todd, Godspeed, man. Good luck. Keep us posted. Let us know how it's going. Glad your wife is good and you're on your way. We'll be back in just a second on the Short Code Podcast. Hey, you know, Dr. Oz is back.
Oh, God.
On the air.
Where did he go, though?
Yeah, was he gone?
He was. Oprah. We talked about him a lot last summer, the summer before last. Then he faded from view because Oprah canceled him and
the whole Senate hearing thing.
Yeah. So, you know, his ratings dipped by about 50%, and his reputation, as measured by reputation measuring people,
Nielsen rating or
whatever. I don't know. I don't know.
I'm sure there was a lot of calls to have his medical license revoked.
Yeah, there were.
So he probably had to deal with that.
His colleagues were basically like, yeah, not too pleased.
Understandably
with him. And so in the past he used his right to free speech to defend his statements.
And then it's medical advice.
No, he said it wasn't medical. It's not a medical show. He said that was his defense. It's not a medical show, and I have a right to free speech. Of course,
it's just called Dr. Oz, and he wears scrubs and talks about his medical degree,
right.
And then proceeds to give you information.
Mm-hmm. Come on. Anyway, he is back. He's back on the radio, and he has been on a listening tour of America to learn about how his brand of TV medicine.
That's what I want to do. I think I'm going to just pause. Mm-hmm. Pause my current career aspirations.
You can't do a listening tour.
Call up
Dylan Todd, medical student.
Just to let you know, we're pausing everything and I'm going on a listening tour indefinitely.
A listening tour.
That's hilarious. Sorry.
I guess I'm happy to see that he went on a listening tour. I hope that changes things for him. I hope he it would be interesting if he regained success by being a doctor who used some scientific rigor and wasn't mm-hmm. pushing pills or whatever and quick fixes and all that kind of stuff.
It'd be funny if he became someone who busts that stuff.
Yeah, he should.
With such intimate knowledge of how it works and then how he it should goes end, about.
And then he could end each show with some sort of mea culpa on bended knee.
Yeah. If he's interested, I bet he can make a lot but of then money
he could,
doing
he,
that.
Yeah, he could write a really awesome book about he used to be one of them, then he turned against mm-hmm. them, and here's See,
maybe this you know,
here's
his
story. Yeah,
I actually don't mind Dr. Oz that much. I think part of it is just that just that idea of health promotion, that people are more concerned with what they're putting in their body and what's going on with their body. I think I don't know if you look at the net good of I dislike pseudoscience as much as the next guy, but there is some positive effect that I think he's having on people. But one thing I like to mention is that his wife is a huge alternative health guru, and I think it's
I did not realize
she's that. She's more far out than he is as far as more like mystical type stuff.
Maybe she was what was behind it all.
What if she was
pulling his
so.
Strings?
No, I think she's the
what if she's legit and she has in mind control?
I think she's the puppet mistress. So I don't
Whoa.
Think he... Yeah.
Well, if you look at his history, he has a very credible... Yeah. Like,
he's a cardiothoracic surgeon. I mean, he's like, you know...
It takes something to get there.
I mean, that takes a long time. Like a lot of training. Yeah. So, yeah.
Man.
Maybe.
But I think it's hard to just all of a sudden like rebrand yourself if the person you come home to is like completely different worldview than the
that's true. I don't know. I don't think I see as much positive in Dr. Oz as you might, but
yeah, I don't know. I feel like people
he seemed like he undermines like the pursuit of actual truth.
I mean, at least it's not a vaccine denier.
Yeah,
that's
true. It could be worse. Mm. You're completely spot on. Yeah. And I think what you're saying, the idea of people caring what they put in their bodies is good.
Yeah.
But he feeds into the idea, and my biggest issue is he feeds into the idea that there's a quick fix for these things. Like, oh, take this green coffee bean extract and you will lose 30 pounds.
At least he's not pro vaccines in the sense of injecting yourself with acai berry extract.
Oh yeah.
That would be worse. At least he's not doing that.
Thanks, Dr. Oz. Short show today. Because I have things to do.
Oh, all right, Dave.
I do. I have to finish these MSPs.
He has other podcast families.
I want to stop. Yeah. <In Canada.
laughs> It's my biggest fear.
I'm sorry. I double booked my podcast.
There'll be an angry horde of M4s here if Dave doesn't get those done. So.
I just picture walking down the streets on a rainy day and looking in a window and just seeing Dave gleefully chatting it up with another little podcast booth. Who is that? You won't even see me through the window.
Oh, no.
Oh, I can paint it now.
You found my secret. Oh, anyway, I want to thank our listeners for listening this week because, you know, otherwise we'd be sitting here doing this for nothing. If you like what you heard on the Short Code Podcast today, leave us a review and some stars on iTunes or Stitcher. Before we go, we'd like to invite you to tell us about your moment of truth. If something strange or wonderful happened to you, if you're annoyed or pleased about something, or if you want to suggest a story idea to us, leave us a message at theshortcoat.com. Do follow and talk to us on Twitter so we can all stay up to date on what's happening at the margins of medicine. The show is made possible by this strange world we live in and a generous donation by Carver College of Medicine, Student Government, and the Writing and Humanities Program. Our executive producer is Jason Lewis. Our intern is Corey Christensen. Our opening music is by Dr. Vox, and our closing music is by C2C. Talk to you in 1 week. We'll be right back.